All right, Professor Dugan, it's great to see you again. As I mentioned before, it's been the world has changed since last I saw you in 2019 at the brink of this whole what I would call plandemic. And now we're in a situation where Russia is very much vilified by the world, the Western world. I think the West thinks everyone in the world sees Russia as a villain. I believe if you look to the rest of the world of India, China, many Middle Eastern countries, Africa, there's not this kind of mentality, but the West believes that the whole world is the West. So America and Western Europe, especially, the NATO countries and the allies of the Second World War, not including Russia, very much view their perspective as the only reality. And according to the Western perspective, you are one of the most dangerous people in the world because they say that you are influencing Putin and helping him create a playbook. So first, I think we should start by understanding this Ukraine conflict, not as the West calls it, Hitler going into Czechoslovakia. How would you frame this conflict between Ukraine and Russia?
So, first of all, I think that you are absolutely right about the manner to look at the world. Because for the West, modern West, the world is West and its projections. So, there is the same West and something that is less than the same or equal to the same. So, that is ethnocentric version on the civilizational level. So the West understand it is only its monologue. Its monologue that is expanded to other parts. So if you don't agree with the main roots of the West or rules-based international order, as the West conceives to be reality or would be reality, it's very important because any kind of thinking in the political way, it is wishful thinking. Any kind of prophecy is a self-fulfilled prophecy. So the West, when West look at it for looks at something, the West forms something. It look us at. So that is active projection of would be ontology, of model ontology, an ontology not how it is, but how we wish it to be. And that is normal. That is quite normal for all kind of civilizations, or ethnic society, or just archaic society or modern society or postmodern society, everybody is the same. So we put subject in the center as the core, and we consider everything around us as kind of projections of this self. So, and now it is not about one country attacking the other country, one nation fighting with other nation. It is just about this global vision because the West consider everything like the West and under West, the rest. And the West, as Huntington has put it, citing Toynbee, the other Western philosopher. So there is the West and the rest. But the rest should be exactly like the West. That is a kind of hope, desire, that is kind of expectation. The rest to become the West. Or there is something in the rest that is under West. That is the West, that is not yet West, but on the road to become the West. That's all. That is the West and the rest. And what the rest should not have. The rest should not have the subjectivity. When I have spoken, I have many times said the same. When I have spoken with Mr. Brzezinski about chessboard, chess as a play, as a game, he has said, I have asked him, do you think, Mr. Brzezinski, that chess is the game for two? He said, no, it is game for one. You make step, you turn the chessboard, you make step by with blacks, and after that with whites. So that is purely ethnocentric vision, very sincerely described as a monologue of the West is going on. So if you are passive, if you are weak, so they play you as they wish. So the West moves its own figures and the figures of the opponents. So imagining the opponent, creating, for example, how they have used radical Islam or Salafi or Al-Qaeda, that was fully created with the theology. They have created this tendency in Islamic world in order to attack Ottoman Empire, after that to fight against pro-Soviet tendency in the Islamic world. But they have created from zero this pseudo ideology or pseudo theology as they play this chessboard with themselves. The same, the only way, so the West and the rest created or manipulated by the West. And Putin in this attack against Ukraine is a kind of the figure that is breaking the rules. That is why Fukuyama recently has called Putin to be in the war against liberal world order. And liberalism or liberal world order, it is a rules-based international order, says Fukuyama. But he has forgotten to add rules set by West world order. So that is Western rules world order, and Putin is challenging it now. That is why we are hated, but I was hated as much as Russia today. Long before that, I was called most dangerous philosopher, Rasputin, evil brain, but I was nobody else as advocate of this multipolar understanding of the subject. My main idea was and is still that we have not only one West, only one subject, only one player in the world, only one set of rules accepted internationally and universally. I am advocating that there are not only one civilization, but civilizations with S on the end. Few civilizations, not too many, but more than one or two or three. For example, following Huntington, there is Western Anglo-Saxon Atlantist civilization, clearly defined, but the main...
But wrong too, by the way. You know, very, very wrong. I mean, look at these Western countries have been fighting for hundreds of years. These, you know, the French versus the Germans versus the English, right? They've been battling for territory and influence and ideology and culture for hundreds and hundreds of years. So all of a sudden, the fact that they organize themselves against Russia is the only thing actually keeping them together in some ways, if you think about it.
I think that is something deeper. So the modern state of things in the West is the logical end of historical experience. So these countries, they had classical Roman roots, Western country, but they were separated as nation, and finally they have returned to the same matrix on the postmodern liberal level. So there is the West, I think. There is the Western Christian civilization that became anti-Christian in the beginning of the modernity with the Enlightenment. And now it is the full perfection of this modernity, Western modernity, represented in globalism. But I think that besides this civilization, there is Islamic civilization as well, not united. So if the Western civilization is not united and with many, many variants and differences, there is Islamic civilization. There are common ground, common set of rules, but very different interpretations of them. Shia Islam, one thing, Sunni other, Pakistani Islam, Indonesian Islam, Arab Islam, Turkish Islam, Iranian Shiism, not Iranian Shiism. So there are so many, many versions of Islam, but there is Islamic civilization because there is something common. The same with India. There are many, many tendencies, many sects in India, but there is Indian civilization. There is Chinese civilization. There is Russian Orthodox civilization, there is African civilization, and multiplicity and differences inside of African society is much richer than Islamic or European world. It's just a world, a universe, African universe, the same with, or almost the same for Latin America. That is different Catholic civilization, very, very, very separate from North America. And I think that the world order that is emerging now with this conflict between Russia and Ukraine, it is precisely about that, about the passage, the shift from the unipolar world of monologue of the West to multipolar world where new poles are emerging. Russia clearly defined now. China, the other pole, I think India now is going to become the fourth pole in that balance of power in this new multipolar world order. Islamic civilization, African and Latin America, American. So we are coming to totally new era when now West likes to say Putin is absolute evil, Russia is mad crazy aggressors killing innocent Ukrainians, and that is established truth. And China respond, not at all. No, we don't believe you. We don't agree with you. We have our own understanding of what is going on. Iran enters on the scene and says, oh no, we have nothing too criminal, more criminal than you, the West, have done in Afghanistan, in Middle East. So we aren't very happy, say Iranians, with what Russia is doing, but we much more against you doing the same or the similar things to a Muslim world. So we hate you much more than we hate Putin. So please keep your objections to yourselves. India says, oh no, we are going to make a trade with Russia. We could buy a military weapon for rupiah, for rubles. Turkey, who is the part of NATO, says we would use this window of opportunity in order to reinforce our own sovereignty. So, and when the West expects total submission to say Russians are bad, and every pro-Western regime say, oh yes, it's bad, it's terrible, it's terrible. We are following your order, masters, Master Brzezinski, Master Soros, Master Biden. But more and more, including in the West, there are voices who say, maybe Russians are not good, but the West has done everything to provoke Putin to this step. So let us accept the guilt as well for the West, or responsibility. And I think in United States, maybe I'm wrong, but some of the Trumpists, some of alternative to Biden, say exactly that. So in time of Trump, nobody would imagine this attack. That is a logical consequence steps and attitude of Biden's administration. Biden, with his totally perverted son, they have invested in this Maidan, in this biolaboratories, furnishing weapon, supplying with weapon Ukrainian regime, and all that in order to push them against us. So there is responsibility. And I don't like to be propagandist of Russia. So I prefer to explain, to understand, to interpret, rather than make apology of that. In my opinion, this conflict, very dramatic, because it is fratricidal conflict, because we are fighting against our ourselves. They are not other. They are not different kind of people. We are fighting inside ourselves with the Russians. They are Russians as well as we are. So we are part of the same people, and that is very tragic. So my heart is broken by that. I'm not happy in nothing that it what is going on, and I could blame, obviously, the West, Kyiv, Ukrainians, but I think that we Russians, we have made so many errors, so many mistakes, treating them improperly. So we're making the wrong steps, wrong gestures. So I could not say that we are innocent, they are totally wrong. So it is not correct. So right. if we try to understand what is going on, we should put aside these assumptions about evil guys, good guys, totally innocent guys, victimized, pure victims, because we are all in the same time. We are aggressors, we are victims, we are provoked, or we are, and at the same time we are responsible for what we are doing. So it is very complicated. In the reality, in historic reality, we could not measure nothing by this white and black structure. So if we try to understand what is going on, we should take in consideration different factors and to lead our analysis on different levels.
Indeed. So in terms of where, because there's so much to get into, obviously, we don't want to get into all the origins. I think myself and others, my father's documentary, Ukraine on Fire, Revealing Ukraine, are very important. A lot of people are watching that now. They're familiar a little bit now with some of the backstory. But in terms of trying to express the Ukraine conflict, how do you see it playing out? Where can this end? Because a lot of people obviously are trying, in the West, are trying to say Putin wants to drive into Poland next and all this, you know, going to the Baltic states. Do you see that, or do you see this very specific to Ukraine? And what do you think would be a satisfactory peace to achieve?
So I think that we have different set of goals in that. There is the main goal, to affirm Russia as sovereign and independent pole of multipolar world. That is the main goal. What is enough to achieve this goal? That depends on many things, many things. So for example, I think that first of all, what is enough to start military operation? If we have started special military operation, we have affirmed Russia as independent pole of multipolar world. When we have received all these sanctions, they have striken precisely the worst part of Russian society, the weakest, part of Russian society, and wicked as well, because our oligarchy and rich people are less Russian, less responsible for our country, and they are regarded as enemy of the peoples. And now they are under attack of the West. So the West helps us to purify our society. So when we started that, in spite of the result, that was already so huge thing. So I think the main goal is already achieved. So we are in clearly opposition with the West, And the West, as modern West, liberal West, globalist West, is the main enemy. When you recognize the real enemy as such, it is already victory, because when enemy is inside you and you could identify it, you could not make it explicit. So if you bear the enemy inside, it is very, very difficult. It's a schizophrenic, bipolar disease. And when you exteriorize the enemy inside, when you put him outside, you're almost cured. So that is about that, I think, first of all. So that result is almost achieved. Now it is great inner cleansing of Russian society. We are purifying ourselves from this Western globalist corrupted elite inside of our society, because we have three things in Russia: people, Putin, and elite. Putin and people is on one side, and the elite is on the other side. It is great massacre of Russian liberal pro-Western elite, what is going on now. And the massacre are made by the West, by sanctions, by taking the property stolen from Russia, put in the yacht everywhere. So the real happiness of us to see how our oligarchs are punished, are destroyed, are robbed, because they have robbed us, and we are smiling, we are applauding to watching how they are robbed by the West. So thank you, Mr. Biden, for this terrible sanction against the real evil guys in Russia. So that is great. And the first result is already achieved. Concerning Ukraine, I think that we have a kind of spectrum of goals on the lesser level. So I think that demilitarization and denazification of the Ukraine as declared or proclaimed goals by Mr. Putin, we could achieve only if we install the full control over all territory of Ukraine. So that is the main goal, to have this control, to destroy military infrastructure totally and put this territory under our control in order to avoid the future possibility to use this territory against us with this political system. Denazification as well demands full control over political system. So we could not say, oh, please be friendly after what we have done. So they will revenge in very soon when we get out. If we get out, the revenge will come, and they would have, Ukrainians would have all the reasons to do that. So we could not let them exist as they existed before. It's impossible, incredible. So that will be the huge damage for us. So after a moment we have started the operation, we should finish it. So we could not let it unfinished. So we have to achieve these proclaimed goals and to create a situation of the irreversibility of this achievement. So I think that is, to say the truth, that is the goal on the Ukraine. But if situation will be difficult for us, as it could happen, because in the military operation, everything could happen, and we could not be absolutely sure that victory is already ours. We are fighting for that, but it is not yet ours, to say the truth. So we could imagine, I would say, the minimal results. There's this partition of the Ukraine and creating Nova Russia in the eastern part, Odessa, Kharkov, Nikolaev, Zaporozhye, Kherson, and Donbas Republic. That was the part of the Russian territories acquired from Turkish Ottoman Empire by Russian Tsars. Nothing to do with Ukraine, nothing to do with Mother Russia historically. I think that would be not enough, because we will have new war, a new military conflict with the Western part supplied with all supplies of NATO, nuclear weapons. So it is not a radical solution. But if situation would go wrong, I think this partition of Ukraine is almost already possible. About the possibility of the war with Poland, if Poland intervenes, there will be the war with Poland. So I'm absolutely sure that Russia will strike the Poland with some weapon if there will be intervention on the side of Ukrainians. And I think that is decided not by Warsaw, but by Washington. If Washington tried to do with Poland the same that Washington has done with Ukraine, so Poland could be as well the part of this massacre. And I don't think that achieving control over Ukraine, Putin will go further. So I think to us to create the real established real pole, it is enough. I think some reunification with Belarus will follow as well. So we would restore Eastern Slavs state, a great state with 50 millions of people plus. For us, that will be great. So we will restore our imperial greatness with this reunification. We could as well prolong this unification to the Asia, but that depends. But that the poll is already done, and after that we will construct multipolar system, creating alliances, creating a balanced system when nobody would depend only from the West. So everybody would depend on everybody in this multipolar world. So if you don't buy our gas for rubles, for example, we could sell it to Chinese, to Indian, for and that the same in technology, the same with ideology, the same with network. So we are obliged to organize a kind of special Russian internet as China. So in order not to be dependent from the West, because the West has cut our internet almost.
Right. So you mentioned Brzezinski earlier, and certainly he was perpetuating this grand chessboard of continuing the Halford Mackinder, the British imperial policy, right, of destabilizing, keeping Eurasia unstable, right? You don't the policy, as you know, of the British since the 20th century, beginning of the 20th century, was always to keep Germany and Russia and China and sort of at odds, and then, you know, ideally, you know, working with the Central Asian countries to destabilize, you know, the underbelly, Turkey, Crimea, right, all these countries to kind of keep Russia unstable. But what do you see as the agenda with Ukraine? Is this America and the Europeans looking for economic zones, natural gas and wheat, or do they really believe that they can achieve regime change by taking country by country, ultimately to take Russia? Is that the ultimate goal for the West, is to capture Russia basically under their political and economic interests?
I think that is ongoing eternal war between sea power and land power, precisely defined and described by Mackinder and continued by Spykman and finally represented by Brzezinski. It is not just one line of strategical tradition of the West. I think, I'm absolutely sure, that this geopolitical Atlanticist vision is the unique and the main line, because it explains everything in the 20th century, all elements in 21st centuries. That is, and before, in the great game, big game between Russia and the British Empire. So everything fits excellently, very well in this vision of Mackinder, sea power against land power, because it is not just strategy. That is as well civilizations, one civilization oriented to the progress, to material achievement, democracy, changing rules, and there is the other conservative, constant, fixed society with the same values, traditional society. So that is Rome against Carthage. There is Sparta against Athens. So that is something that is inscribed in the logic of the human history. And in the last some two, maybe three centuries, it is inscribed in Eurasia against the West, Anglo-Saxon West. And United States of America was not the part of that. So in time of Mackinder, he suggested that yeah, America is heartland, is much more closer to continental Russia. That was outskirts of the world with continental identity. So
as you know, we had a good relationship. America and Russia at that time had a wonderful, a long history of, we inspired the Trans-Siberian Railroad. The Russians inspired us to free the slaves. They helped us, the Russians helped us in the Civil War. I mean, there was a good relationship between Russia and America at the time.
Absolutely, absolutely, and more than that. So, for example, many things we shared in our relation to the space and many common things. And now, what is interesting, the electoral map of United States of America today shows what is the Rhineland and what is the heartland in America, in North America, because red states, pro-Republican states, it is heartland, and they are much more normal people living, and on the coast, they live precisely this perverted technocratic elite, globalist elite, completely insane, mad sect of globalists, and this fight as well, it is inner geopolitics of United States of America. That is why we see in this continental Trumpist Republican traditional old style America rather the friend than opponent. But English imperialism was totally different, and this initiative to rule the world based on this sea power set of rules was transferred after the First World War from the British Empire to Wilsonian United States. 14 principles of Wilson were precisely this program of globalization, global democracy, liberalism, promotion of liberalism, intervention, and so on. That was transferred of the this sea power mission. And that was, I think, very, very negative for America. But still, there is the other America that is fighting or against that from inside. And that is rather in favor of land power, continental America. So, this tradition of Wilson, before Wilson of British Empire, Wilson, after that, Spikman, Brzezinski, globalism, it is Biden today. That is the same line of world domination by sea power. And this sea power elite, sea power, they are not Americans, they are globalists. They tried to use Ukraine to as their main power against Russia. They are right, because that is our weak point. If you take the control over Ukraine, you create a kind of schizophrenic separation, division inside of Russian of Russian world. There is something that always presents itself as alternative, pro-Western alternative. That was the case many times in our history, and always there is the fight between Russian West and Russian East, with the always the victory of the Russian East. Of the Moscow, before that, the Prince of Vladimir, they played the same role in our history. But I think that the main idea of the West, main strategy of the West, is to to strangle Russia, to encircle Russia, to get further into the continent in order to cut Russia from the warm seas, as they said in the past, and to control, and after that to as well regime change operation. But today, interesting thing, they don't say anymore about regime change operation. They say in the United States, in the Truth Electoral Commission and CFR, about Putin's change operation, because regime is very pro-Western. They have globalists have nothing against this liberal democratic oligarchic regime in Russia. They don't want anymore to change regime or elite. They want to change one person that represents the real Russia, independent, sovereign, land power Russia. Putin is Rome, and they try to destroy Rome because people of the Rome and the emperor of the Rome are the same, but elite or regime is just imitation of the Western liberal democracy, and the West knows how to manage it, how to pay corrupt, how to impose the rule, how to seduce elite, but they could not do nothing against the Rome.
I was going to ask you, so do you believe that Putin has too much power in Russia? Because if too much power is held within the hands of one man, as we know, what happens then when he does leave power? I mean, I know that that's certainly an aspect he talked about with my father. You know, he has a deep concern for Russia. Obviously, he's been able to stabilize, and I think in many ways spearhead a nice renaissance, right? Russia of the 90s was a destroyed state. Russia today is a much revitalized, stronger economy. I think overall more optimistic, prouder country, right? A real continuation of the civilization that Russia represents historically. So if Putin, let's say, were to leave tomorrow, is there too much power in his hand, or do you have faith that what has been created in Russia will continue and cannot just be overthrown if the America gets their way and replaces Putin?
So first of all, I think that this authoritarian tradition is the main feature of our history. So we are Tsarists and we are monarchists from the bottom. It is not imposed monarchy. That is demanded monarchy. That is the monarchy on demand. And so that are we who insist to Putin to become real emperor and not the Putin wants it. That's, as long as I understand him, he doesn't want at all to become a really authoritarian ruler. That is that we insist. We insist on him to become that. So we are giving to him in our classical paternalist tradition all the possible power, and we are very unhappy when he denies that. So we want to see him rule authoritarian ruler, and not he wants to impose himself as such. That is very important. But I think that precisely his power and his legitimacy is based on the fact that he understands what the people want and what is the logic of Russian history. So he is in tune with two extremely important powers, with the history and with the people. And that is why we prefer to have him than any other leader or any political system. It is fragile. I agree. That is very, very fragile. But that was fragile and dangerous, especially dangerous, before the starting of this military special operation, because now any possible ruler of Russia with having what we have now with Ukraine will be obliged to be strong authoritarian leader, not only during operation, but after operation and in the future. So Putin has secured some structural position for the future leader. That is transfer of power operation, this special military operation, because you could not be the leader without having this burden to bear empire on the shoulders, and that demands precisely the same authoritarian leadership. We could not imagine weak or democratic oriented leader precisely because it is incompatible with this burden, and this burden is something destined to define the structure of the future political system of Russia. I think that during this special operation, very important political reform will be done. So it is necessary. We could not let this oligarchic, corrupted pro-Western system to stay, depending on the West, being the part of the West, being integrated, embedded in the Western system. Now we have cut these links and now that is totally new political system that is emerging in Russia, and I think that will much more formally less liberal, at least maybe democratic, but not in the liberal democracy style. Maybe it will be a kind of mixture between illiberal democracy, organic democracy, with some hierarchical structure, with new position of the aristocracy, warrior aristocracy. So that will be something Russian, something much, much more pronounced Russian than now, because now Russian identity transpires through Western facade. So modern Russia is not real Russia. Modern Russia is compromised. Modern Russia is the imitation of the Western liberal political system with copied constitution without any deep values present there. Now we have changed a little bit, but that is just small things in the last voting for a referendum for constitution. We have put there the belief in God, the normal family between man and woman, many conservative traditionalist elements, but at the same time, I think that and the whole text of constitution still is liberal. So I think that Putin now is obliged to make political reform in order to make his follower, his heir, less vulnerable for possible attack of the West. And that is why situation is less fragile than it was 1 month ago.
You know, one thing that has many people that understand the conspiracy that you're talking about when it comes to the Atlanticist technocrats, essentially, is this, this conspiracy of consolidating power in global government, right? What's been called, they've called it themselves, the New World Order, right? And they even recently, that's been coming up all the time. Biden talked about it at WEF. I think they talked about it recently. How do you see Russia within the New World Order? Because there is the argument that Putin at some points was part of the World Economic Forum young leaders, I believe, early on, and sort of at some levels was adopting for Russia some of the technocratic designs of the fourth industrial revolution, right? Some of the concerns people have being merging our digital and our physical identities, as Klaus Schwab talks about, right? Our physical, our digital, and our biological identity being merged, very much a design for the merging of the human with the machine, which is where many of these oligarchs are really looking to move us, right? People like Gates and others. And so when we saw in Russia that Russia was pushing sort of some of the vaccine mandates and some of the same policies around COVID that we saw in the West, we said maybe Putin is basically still part of the same strategy of controlling the population using the science of the elites, essentially, of the oligarchy, and using technology in this way to control. the population. But since the war started, it seems more clear that Russia's maybe doing something different, as you said, establishing the multipolarity of the world, which we've shifted towards, right? It's no longer a unipolar world. So how do you see Russia fitting into the new world order? Do you believe Russia and Putin in particular and company are rejecting the new world order design and basically saying we're not going to go with this idea of we're going to force humans to be merged with machinery? We believe in the human soul, we believe in spirit, and ultimately what I look at is a spiritual war, right, between those who actually believe in God and those who really have no faith and are only materialists in their psychology.
I think that new world order, that is precisely liberal world order, first of all. And I recently have written the book that is called Great Reset Against Great Awakening. It is distributed through network in the English and other languages. So my idea is that Great Reset and new world order is precisely the terminal stage of historical liberalism. That started with liberation of individual from any kind of collective identity. And the last step, that is liberation from human identity. Hence these transhumanist agenda. So liberation started with Protestantism from Catholic collective identity of the church, after that estates, traditional Middle Ages hierarchy, so noblesse, priests, and so that was destroyed by bourgeois, by capitalism. After that, that was individual identity liberated from nation states, so that is global identity, civil society. After that, that will liberation of the sexual identity. So there is no more man and a woman, there is individual that could choose the sexual gender identity. That was as well the part of this agenda. That is why it's so important in the liberalism. And the last form of collective identity is the human, because human is collective. So in order to destroy and liberate individual from this identity of the species, of the human species, you need to get out of that. You need to make this machinery, this cyborgs, this mixture, this chimeras, and give the power to artificial intelligence. It is nothing of a conspiracy theory here. It is just the logical development of historical liberal ideology that is prevailing in the West. And with this global world order, new world order, or great reset of Schwab, of Biden, and all these guys, it is arriving at the last stage. It is the logical stage. So it is not just something casual, something spontaneous, or some deviation of the history. It is arriving to the terminal station. So if we're buying the ticket to Massachusetts, and when we're arriving there, it is nothing strange in that. So that was from the very beginning, that was planned. So somehow you arrive there. So the same with the posthumanism. Starting this process of liberation of individual from any kind of collective identity, you sooner or later you come to Schwab, to Klaus Schwab, to Davos Forum, and so on. Putin, interesting, how Putin has arrived to the point we are now. He started with trying to reconcile two unreconcilable things: sovereignty and the social progress and globalism. So he liked to make marriage between them, to let us be sovereign and we will be exactly like you. We will be the part of World Trade Organization. We will attend Davos Forum. We will be like you exactly, liberal Democrats totally, but let us give us chance to be Russian sovereign country, totally accepting Western set of rules. But they say, no, that is contradiction, responded globalists to Putin. You should abandon the sovereignty that could not fit in our new world order. The new world order is based on the absence of nation state, that is a liberal idea to get out from the borders of traditional states. You should stop to be Russia. You should accept our agenda. So you can enter in the new world order only abandoning Russia as sovereign state. And that was contradiction. Putin said no, I like to conserve, to preserve Russian identity and Russian sovereignty. And they responded, no, you should not, you cannot, that is contradiction. You should make a suicide. No sovereignty, only liberalism. Liberalism, yes, sovereignty, no. And 22 years, Putin was making the thought, he was thinking how to get out of this dilemma, how to solve this unsolvable problem, because he wanted both. And they have said, and they responded, no, both, no, one, only one. So no Russia, everything quite good. And step by step, Putin has arrived to the point when he has finally chosen sovereignty. But that means the war against the world order. That means direct war against liberal rules-based international world order. And that is insurrection. That is kind of revolution against new world order. What is going on in Ukraine? That is ongoing revolt against new world order, against this plan and defense of the sovereignty on any price. So we have paying now the price. No World Trade Organization, no normal trade of the gas, no Nord Stream 2, no Nord Stream 1, nothing. No technology, no network, no Facebook, no YouTube, no vaccine, nothing. So we are alone. And that is the price we have paid for our sovereignty. But it is not the end still, because I think that the main characteristic of a new world order is global, universal expansion of it. So they could not tolerate us. So they will fight us. And that will be next step. Now we are just cut. And tomorrow or in the future, we will be attacked. Directly or indirectly. So we have nuclear weapon. It is the only our trust. And the nuclear bomb we trust, I would say, in order to preserve our sovereignty in that radical opposition with the rest. I think that now it is something like that. And maybe after the victory, the West would make one more effort to suffocate us and embracing us, not to integrate us once more in the global system in order to kill us, but that will be very difficult, including for the West. So I think that Russia now is fighting against New World Order, and I don't think that New World Order planned that. So that is just logic of the history, because Putin tried until one month ago, he tried to reconcile two irreconcilable things. And finally, he has chosen revolt and not submission. So that is very important. And it was extremely difficult for him psychologically and individually, because he would prefer to combine that. Not total, but he is obliged with Biden. He was obliged to make the choice, irreversible choice, and the costs are thrown.
Yeah, I think that really sums it up very, very nicely. I'm just curious, last question really is, you mentioned some of the Trump camp, which was more nationalistic, And I think within the oligarchy, you could call it, or the elite, there's a split between those that are globalists, right? And that's really the New World Order agenda is based in getting rid of nation states, national sovereignty as much as possible, absorbing people and peoples into these transnational organizations, right? Under the auspices of, you name it, multinational corporations and things like this. So are there any thinkers, I mean, like the John Mearsheimers or others, Professor Mearsheimer or others, or any leaders that you look to in the West that actually you see there's hope that they actually get a little bit of Russia, or they understand a little bit of the position that you're in a sense, ideological allies, do you see in the Western world at all?
First of all, I think that the closer to us are all the people who share realist approach, realist. So, and that is the half of all tradition in international relations. So in international relations, there is debate, classical debate between liberals and realists. And as long as I understand, in the Western schools and academies teaching international relations, there is almost half-half. So realists and liberals. Realists believe in the sovereignty of national states and regard the war as possible, undesirable but possible issue. And there is pacifist, liberal, globalist regarding only one legitimate form of governments, global world government. So they are liberals, they are New World Order partisans, they are globalists. And so logically, Putin is now, he is obliged to fight globalism on the global scale, so, and to challenge this global system, New World Order. But at the same time, personally, individually, psychologically, he's just realist. He's just realist. Hence his devotion to sovereignty. And when Mearsheimer, with Trumpists, Trump is realist. So Trump is formed in totally different structure, different school. So there is sovereignty as a highest level of decision. So hence the chaos in the international relations, that is not bad. That is just the term. The chaos means there is no supranational authority that can, basing on the law, to impose the will on national states. So every national state is, at the end of the day, is totally free. It's totally free. That is realism. And when we are dealing with American realists, there are rare realists in Europe. There are mostly liberals. But in America, there is the big tradition of this political realism. When we are speaking with such figures in the United States, we understand each other immediately. They ask, what do you want? We say, we want Ukraine. Oh, good. What would you, how do you, would arrange that? What price you would pay for it? What are some laws that we have can, or how we can pursue you not to do that? For example, there is logical discussion, and that is not about you are wrong, we are right, sign here, we win, you lose, sign here, as the liberals conduct, behave themselves. But that is a normal relation between one subject and the other. That is a kind of trade. So we want Ukraine, we don't let you Ukraine, but let's think how we do arrange to mutual consensus. And that is possible with realists. Between realists, it's possible to speak with that, avoiding, because the war is from very beginning possible, we could try to make everything to avoid it. We don't say, oh, who starts the war as the devil? No, you can start the war, we can start the war, everybody, because everybody is sovereign on this level. And every who is sovereign, it means the same. Who is sovereign can start the war. And because it is possible, we think how to avoid that. So you become that, you receive that, you pay. So that is just the deal. And with Trump, with Mearsheimer, with all these American realists, we could make a deal about one thing, about Ukraine, with Poland, about Eastern Europe, about our, about China, about Muslim world. We could arrange a kind of exchange system, balancing, evaluating what do you want, what I can give you. So that is a kind of normal kind of speech. With the war, always possible. And because it is possible, we understand that we should avoid it. It is, pacifism is not everything. That is highest value. The highest value is national interest for all realists. But knowing that war is possible, we always are very careful when using that. So that was the logic of Putin. Putin tried to avoid the war, but globalists could not hear. They live in different universe, in the universe that denies the existence of the other. And realist, any serious realist, recognizes the existence of the other, at least on the level of national state. So I think that is, they should not be absolutely in nothing pro-Russian. This American realist, they could hate us or laugh us. It's absolutely equal. So nothing personal, just realism. If you are, if your mentality is put on the mental map of realism, we could achieve very, very good agreements. That would satisfy both of you. It is not easy. Nobody says that it's easy or automatically taken for granted. But that is possible. With speaking with new world order is impossible, but only with the revolt, with the insurrection. So now the globalists have insurrection. That will be or the end of the world or the end of the new world order.
I love that. Very well said. And exactly the point. You know, when you're dealing between nation states, nations, you have to compromise, just like people, right? We have to negotiate. We have to hear each other. We have to make compromise. When you're dealing with a global empire, basically that where the decisions are made behind the scenes and the orders are given like mandates from the top down, there's no room for compromise. There's no room for respect. And that's what we've seen is basically 30 years of the United States not respecting anyone. I mean, really not the United States. Really, it's the globalists that rule America, because the American people, I don't think, are represented by these globalists. But essentially, we've seen America imposing its will on behalf of the globalists wherever it wants. And finally, Russia said, no, respect us. We're a sovereign, powerful nation, a great civilization with great history. And you didn't respect us for the last 30 years. And now we're going to say enough. And I think this is the beginning of a whole new era for, you know, for all these countries, for Russia, India, China, the Middle Eastern countries. I mean, it's basically saying it's time to be re-empowered as sovereign nations and as people again, to feel that we're not being controlled by a bunch of technocrats who are trying to turn us all into machines.
Exactly. As well, the same, they don't recognize this global empire of liberal empire is really becoming totalitarian one. So because confronting with fascism, with communism, liberalism was liberal. Now confronting with itself, it is illiberal. It is clearly totalitarian. So it don't recognize something that could say, oh no, I am not liberal. You cannot be not liberal. That is already racism, the pure racism of liberalism. So you are tolerated when you are liberal. If you are not liberal, you are not tolerated. So that is a kind of negation of the human freedom. That is pure slavery. But now I think that dies cost on the global level, and we are in different situations. So there is a great revolt of against this globalism, and I think American population and American realists could join, not being in favor of us, nothing, every person. So It is the, your problem, and all nations or all peoples, all states and societies should solve this problem by themselves. But the problems now, the kind of the structure of decision is given, is laid clearly before us by this special military operation in Ukraine.
Exactly, exactly. No, and I do believe that the American people did revolt against it by voting for Trump, voting even more for Trump in 2020, and rejecting Biden. So I think Biden is the epitome of all of what the globalists are representing. And I think that's why he's so unpopular.
If you put Trump now, the end will stop immediately.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, listen, we pray for some change here too. So let's, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I really have enjoyed the conversation. I look forward to being in touch further, and let's see how this continues. Hopefully we can get to a new rendition of national sovereignty and compromise and peace, where it's based on mutual respect, not peace based on imposition and force.
And thank you, and best regard to your father, because I am admirer of his art, of his work, of his position, of his attitude, and he is real, not only artist, he is real social and cultural hero. Best regards to him.
Thank you. Thanks, Professor. We'll talk later. Take care.